Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he doesn't kill somebody.
And here we go, another episode of 11 Personnel. Nick Roush here with Adam Luckett, where we're inching closer and closer to the return of sports. Luckett, have you enjoyed the return of the PGA Tour?
I have very much enjoyed watching some golf, my friend, even though we got some news today that wasn't good on that front, but it looks like they're moving forward as planned.
Were you worried that they were about to just say, actually, we're not, we're done golfing for now?
Not this weekend, but like moving forward, they could be where something where they're going to be like, let's kind of reevaluate. But I haven't seen what the commissioner said yet, but it sounds like the few snippets that I saw that he's pretty much like, stop crying, we're going to play golf kind of thing.
Yeah, it was something like, we're going to have to learn to live with the virus, which is, you know, I know that we, you can't say anything about coronavirus without it being like political, but I think regardless, if you want sports to happen, there's a certain amount of, hey, people are going to get it, and it's how we deal with it once they get it, and moving on from there. Now, I'm sure it'll be different if they're like, if somebody becomes severely sick from it. But I think that's kind of the way that you kind of need to go about it for the foreseeable future. And at least in golf, you know, it's no big deal if, you know, Brooks Koepka misses 2 weeks because, I mean, there's not really a major tournament for, what, another 2 months or something like that. So, you know, this is kind of time where you can kind of get all the bad juju out of your system.
PGA Championship's middle of August, I believe. That's the next big tournament. The Memorial is kind of big. It's one of the bigger non-majors. That's in middle of July, end of July. Mm-hmm. So, like these tournaments they're playing right now are the tournaments that everybody sits out during the season.
Right.
Like Harbortown, where they played last week, that's always, I believe, the tournament after the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
So, hardly anybody, pretty relevant plays in that. So,
gotcha.
We've got guys playing tournaments they usually don't play. So, I don't know. I think there's definitely something to that where there's going to be these COVID outbreaks. Like we're seeing in college football right now, teams are getting mm-hmm. together and there's been multiple different types of outbreaks. And I think in social media, some of those have been gotten like, oh my God, I can't believe all this is happening. Well, I think that was kind of what they expected to happen. There was going to be this. You want them to happen now so you can, in theory, keep everybody in a bubble, keep them all together, separate them, where I guess if everybody gets in the same living quarters or the same people you're hanging out with, you'll be able to fight it off. So I think they were wanting to do it now. You want those tests to pop up now so you can, I guess, beat it and get it out of the way.
Right. And kind of develop antibodies. And I didn't want to start with COVID talk, but hell, we're here. We might as well go there. Just like the PGA players are going to Flavortown. We're not calling it Columbus anymore. It's Flavortown, Ohio. It is known. But this week, UK, they made their, I guess they're doing like every 2 or 3 week kind of announcement thing where, okay, here's the latest. Here's what we're doing. Let's move along. And part of that was, hey, the volleyball team, they started coming back this week. The basketball team, they'll be here next week. And also, we've tested 106 student-athletes, which it's all football players at this point. And only 6 of them have tested positive for having a past infection. And that's an important detail because they've only been testing for antibodies. Luckett, were you surprised that they're only doing antibody testing and not the nasal swab test?
Yeah, I'd have to say I was, but I'm not Dr. COVID over here. So I don't, you would think with as much as at stake and how much money they have, they would go ahead and, for the football team, just go ahead and do the full out test. But maybe there's a reason for just doing antibodies, because like you said, you have to eventually operate in an atmosphere where it's probably going to be. And so I guess the antibody tests will make sure someone is not getting, you would probably have to explain it to me. The antibody tests just be like they had it in the past.
Yeah, exactly. It does. It means that you kind of have immunities built up to it.
Okay. Yeah.
So the thing that I guess for me, it's more of like, I think it's good to do the antibody test, but I would think that you would just, why not go ahead and get the regular nasal swab to see if they have it now upon their return. But like you, I'm not Dr. COVID. In UK isn't the only one that's not doing this. Arkansas and LSU, the defending national champions, they're doing the same way. And in UK's explanation, like all of the kind of they said, well, this could change, and it may very well. This is just kind of what we're doing for the time being, and that all changes. I mean, hell, this coronavirus stuff changes all the time. But they also said that something to the effect of, because I don't have it pulled up right in front of me, but we don't want them to not have, like we don't want them to get you test a negative for coronavirus and then you quit wearing masks and you quit social distancing and all that kind of stuff. That was part of the explanation. And the other part was, well, with antibody testing, it's not like you take the regular one and tomorrow you could actually have coronavirus. The antibody testing should cast a wider net, which that makes sense.
Especially when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old guys, your peak physical condition.
Right. And it's one of those things that was like, oh, well, that's kind of weird. Hopefully it doesn't lead to more outbreaks. And it hasn't. I know there's been, like you kind of alluded to earlier, there's been a lot of outbreaks in other places. But the good news, I did want to mention some good news, because I know we get inundated with the bad and that's what pops up. Like Indiana, they had like 300 kids come back. They've had zero positive test results. So there are places out there where it hasn't really hit yet, even though that's not necessarily the headline news, because it's not as scary. And let's be real, Lucky, the scary stuff gets the clicks.
Maybe we all just need to live in Indiana. Maybe that's the secret.
It's a horrible idea. You know what? Give me Corona before I'll ever live in Indiana. Oh,
you say it. You couldn't quarantine 2 weeks in Bloomington, and then you'd be promised that you wouldn't have COVID ever.
So I've only been to Bloomington once, and it was for a basketball tournament, and we actually got to play. Or no, I don't think we went far enough to actually play in Assembly Hall. I think we lost the game right before we got to play there. But we went to Assembly Hall to watch some of the games. And, dude, that place, it gives you the worst vertigo, man. It is, it's something awful. I can't believe an architect was like, hey, this is a good idea for a place to play basketball games. It's absolutely miserable. And as somebody who is not a big fan of heights, because I myself am very tall, that's just not my cup of tea. So do yourself a favor and stay away from Assembly Hall. Enough Hoosier talk, though, Luckett, and enough coronavirus talk. We get enough of that every single day. Football talk. Xavier Peters is leaving the University of Kentucky. He's heading to Garden City JUCO, where he's going to be with another big name from Kentucky football past, Jaren Williams. Two big pieces of news that came out over the weekend. Adam Luckett, were you surprised when Xavier Peters announced, or I guess he didn't actually announce it, it kind of came out through that JUCO football account, but were you surprised when you heard the news?
The writing was kind of on the wall. Anytime you get kind of a high-profile player transfer in this regard, in Xavier Peters, you would think they might keep him around for a little bit extra, but it should not come to a surprise when you've heard the comments whenever his name was brought up by multiple coaches on the coaching staff. And then you looked at Kentucky scholarships numbers. I believe that gets them down to 85. Grant McInnes and Xavier Peters, the last two, got them down to 85. And it was probably just kind of a mutual decision in that, hey, you're not going to play here. At least this year, it's going to be hard for you to get reps. You can go to JUCO, get some reps, and maybe get your stuff in order. Because it's sounding like there's probably some stuff off the field that he's got to get straightened out as well.
Yeah, and that was one of those things that, I mean, I think we even said it at the time. We were surprised when Mark Stoops kind of came out after about 6 weeks. It was one of those things where Peters got the waiver to be able to play, I believe, against Florida. Yeah, he would have been able to get snaps against Florida, but that didn't happen. We're like, okay, well, maybe they're just taking some time to break him in. I'm sure he wasn't really running with the ones. Then about 2 weeks later, you know, once the distraction from the quarterback madness wore off, it was like, hey, is that Xavier Peters guy playing? And, you know, we got the Mark Stoops. He's doing some good things in practice. And then after about 6 weeks, Stoops got one of those questions. It had been a while, and you could tell he was kind of happy that somebody brought it up. He's like, until Xavier Peters starts doing the right things on and off the field, he can't get on the field. And from my understanding, it's he is the quintessential dude. If you have so much potential, if you would just go to work, like big picture, if you think on the macro level, he has all of the talent in the world. And he's an intelligent guy too. He's very thoughtful. He speaks very well. He handles himself very well with the media he's composed. But the micro stuff, the attention, the detail, the day-to-day, just showing up to stuff on time, doing your homework, getting in the playbook and watching film, the very basics, he wasn't doing that. And you know what, like, sometimes for those elite athletes, it's really hard to figure that out. And maybe this, I hope this JUCO experience will wake him up and realize, hey, if you don't do this and live your life by attacking every single day and doing everything you're supposed to, then things aren't going to work out for you.
They really fed the line of, we do things a certain way around here, and Xavier Peters has to kind of live up to our standards pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things you have to do to be able to play on this team. And if you don't do these certain things, you know, we're not going to put up with it.
Right.
I think we saw Jordan Wright deal with that in a little bit. We talked to Brad White after the spring game last year, and he was like, yeah, Jordan played awesome, but, you know, how about you do it in practice?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or don't kind of ad-lib play cowboy out there. do your job. Like, you have a job and do it. And I think Peters probably fell into something similar with that. You're supposed to do this or this. That's what you need to do. And that's just not only on the field on a specific play, that's also in the weight room. That's also nutrition, what you're supposed to eat. That's also, you know, in the classroom. So I would assume there was a bunch of stuff with him in standards he wasn't meeting. That's kind of a program requirement, and it got to this point where it's time for him to move on and head to a different route.
And for folks who haven't been paying attention, who've never seen the Last Chance U show, kids go to JUCO for pretty much two reasons. Okay, I'll give them three, because there's one caveat. One, you get in like big trouble with the law or something. You just get kicked off the team, and you got nowhere to go, so you go to JUCO. Two, it's grades. Grades are, I would say, what, 75% of the culprit, Luckett, is you didn't have them out of school, or you were under-recruited, or you didn't have them out of high school, so you got to go to JUCO. You think 75% is probably a good number for that?
That sounds about right, more than right. And then another case is guys like Calvin Taylor, who maybe were late bloomers.
Yeah, and then, so you have, okay, there's four of them. So I would say 70% are academics. 10% get in trouble with the law. 10% the late bloomers, or they played the wrong position. Like Brandon Echols played quarterback in high school at like 5'10". He was a one-man show. He goes to play wide receiver in JUCO. They flip him to corner, and he's one of the best cornerbacks in all of junior college football. He's an All-American. So, and then there's like a 5% of I'm a quarterback and stuff's not going my way. So, and I've already redshirted, so I've got to go play JUCO for a year. It worked out well for Terry Wilson. And I want to just give you the tweet of the week, Adam Luckett. I don't have like some sort of sponsor for this to give you the tweet of the week, but it really is perfect to show like just juxtapose the difference between 3 years, what the difference will make with Jaren Williams and Terry Wilson.
Did I lose you? No, I'm still here. You want me to read the tweet or you got it pulled up?
I don't have it pulled up. But yeah, I mean, you can read it if you've got it pulled up.
Let me find it. We got to get the word. Slam dunk. I thought you were just going to do it for me. I was waiting.
Oh, no.
I was going to bask in the glory.
I want to give you your glory. Yeah, because here's the thing. I wrote the post the following day, and I wanted to make the point, but I was like, I can't just steal Luckett's thunder and not give him credit. I got to give as Adam Luckett noted in the post.
2017, Terry Wilson starts at quarterback for Garden City Community College after leaving Oregon, while Jaren Williams is committed to being UK's future quarterback. 2021, Terry Wilson is the unquestioned QB1 at UK, and Jaren Williams will play QB for Garden City CC after leaving Miami.
The way they got to Garden City, much different. Terry Wilson goes to Oregon and...
Different, but similar.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert and him, they got recruited in the same class, whereas Miami kind of rooted... I guess they had an offensive coordinator change, so you can give that some credence. But like they brought in De'Aaron King, too, because Jaren Williams was not... Maybe they could have done something physically with him, but all of the reports we got of the way he acted kind of off the field, they're like, we don't need to deal with this anymore. He's not good enough to put up with that.
Right. And then you had the thing where remember that post that came out, I believe in November, that players weren't like going to practice, weren't paying attention. Jaren Williams was skipping meetings or something.
Yeah. He missed curfew the night before they played FIU. And one of the senior captains like anonymously went to the Miami Herald and was like, yeah, dude shows up late the night before a game. I'm pretty sure he still started. He definitely played, and he played horribly, and they lost to FIU. So you have the highest of highs where he's dropping 6 touchdowns against Louisville, and then you have the lowest of lows where that stuff's happening. And so he ends up at Garden City. And it's my, how the turntables.
And it's kind of just a good explanation of what, or a good example, excuse me, of how quarterback recruiting works. Jaren Williams is a 4-star prospect coming out of high school, but when he was coming up, he wasn't a top 100 prospect. So there was a lot of quarterbacks ahead of him. And so what happens,
Georgia year had like Jake Fromm, Trevor Lawrence. That Georgia football class was – no, it wasn't Jake Fromm. It was Justin.
It was the year after Fromm. But, yeah, Fromm was a senior when those guys were a junior.
Yeah, juniors. And Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Jaren Williams, all in the same state. So good luck being a defensive back in the state of Georgia.
Emory Jones, who's at Florida.
Yeah, absolutely loaded.
So you get to where these kids – They want to play for, top of the line programs. They want to play for helmet logos more times than not, because I think they know now that that's the best chance for them to succeed, even though it's stacked competition, because in theory, you're going to be playing with like a top 15, top 10 roster. You're going to have NFL players all around you, and that's going to be the best chance to succeed. But if it doesn't, you can just transfer and go somewhere.
Yeah.
So with Jaren Williams, like, he gets his chance to start, even though he went to a school that didn't really have stability yet under Mark Richt, but it was a brand name, and he goes down there and visits the one time that they had their back moment.
Right. He goes down Notre Dame
for the Notre Dame game, and that, you know, as soon as he does that, it's a switch that gets flipped just like that. Well, anyway, he in Miami, he has his cup of coffee. They alternate between him and Nkosi Perry. He starts against Florida, gets sacked 38 times in the opener, loses his job, yeah, gets it back, torches Louisville. And a couple games there in the middle of the season, you saw why he was a highly rated recruit. Like, you could see, right. You could see really him developing. But then as the season wore on, he really started to stink to join up again. And he lost his job again. And then some stories came out about some off-the-field type stuff.
Right, which that's also the kind of stuff, too, that winning kills all winning heals all ills.
Yeah.
I just sound so damn right.
We don't know what really happened, Nick. And that's true for most other positions. But your quarterback, they can't be doing that.
No, like, you're exactly right.
Your quarterback has to be the leader, and really it's not to say your quarterback, you know, can't be going out and drinking beers or can't be going out and hanging with the boys or chasing tail. Like, they can do all those things, but you have to do it in a certain way, and you have to be a leader where other guys are following you.
Yeah.
And where classic, other guys believe in you.
Shane Bohannon was a classic case of that. Like, dude, you can party, but you just can't be seen everywhere. You know, like, it's not how it works, buddy.
Right. There's definitely a line you have to walk that you can't really cross as a quarterback. And it felt like, you know, he kind of crossed that at Miami because it seemed like some of the players didn't really believe in him.
They lost confidence in him. Correct. But
not only the players, the coaching staff too.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And I think it's one of those things too, like it where, it's not as bad as Wandale Robinson, but I hate cheering against some of these kids, and I don't really mean to, but like the whole flip-flop thing, that was so aggravating, and I know it turned a lot of people off to football recruiting in general.
Welcome to football recruiting. I mean, I'm like, that's just how the game's played, man.
How about our boy Wilcoxon?
I know, we can get into that later.
Oh, let's just go, before we get into that, and we can kind of close the book on this. I will say one last thing about Xavier Peters, because I do think that he fell into one of those four categories that was an academic issue. He could, in theory, like, it doesn't happen very often. It was supposed to happen with Javonte Richardson. He could come back to UK, and typically, it's easier too from that JUCO level because you already have credits at the University of Kentucky. So that could
be a
scenario.
I believe it when I see it, man.
Yeah, like, exactly. I'm the same way. I'm the same way with the one kid, Torrance Davis, the running back who committed but never signed. There's always a chance that something like that can happen, but it rarely does happen. So I'll just wait and see.
The only reason to do that if you're Kentucky is if the play on the field from that guy is just kick ass. Like, where you gotta have him. If it's not, there's no sense. Why just take a freshman out of high school and get more years of eligibility, and then instead of bringing this guy in who already failed in your system once.
And you know why they can afford to do that is because they got the freshman blue chip guys who can play ball right now. JJ Weaver just flat out beat him out. I mean, so what? They're 1 year difference apart. Like, they would have had the same amount of eligibility. Katie McDaniel on his way to be doing the same thing. So, yeah. Now, would it be nice if you're a little thin at inside linebacker? It'd be nice to be able to throw Xavier Peters in at will this year. But, like, there's no denying that. But right now on that edge, like, dude, you've recruited some dudes there. So, you don't need to go out of your way to help this dude out if he's not going to reciprocate.
And back on Jaren Williams, who I'm going to bring up probably wasn't interested in him because of some of the off the field stuff. But if you take that away, Jaren Williams gets on the phone with your cousin Jeff Brohm,
Ooh.
And it's like, I want to play there. Like, that always seemed like a perfect fit for me because they've, Purdue's got, like, quarter, what was that, Plumber kid is kind of who they're rolling with now.
Yeah.
Like, he was very up and down.
He also got murdered, but their offensive line was terrible last year.
I just think with Williams, yeah, the way he can throw the ball vertically and with some of those receivers Purdue has, I think he would have been a really good fit there. But what we've seen with Jaren Williams, it hasn't always been about fit because Kentucky was obviously the most perfect fit. The school that recruited you the longest, you were set up to come in and start as a true freshman, but kind of behind a good offensive line. They were going to tailor the whole offense to your skill set, and he passed on it. So we'll see.
And he did it in dramatic fashion, flip-flopping three times. And he was committed to Kentucky for a long time. And it's kind of like this guy. I believe his name's Kamar Wilcoxon. Am I getting that correct, Adam Luckett?
That is correct.
He committed for the fourth time this weekend. The third time he's committed to the University of Florida. He's like a top 250,
top
300.
Top 300 safety. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, top 300 safety from IMG Academy. And essentially, he unofficially visited Florida. I was just going through his timeline. And he would just commit to Florida every time he took an unofficial visit. He's like, oh, this is great. I'm committing. And they were like, okay, we'll take you. And that all started in 2018. Here it is, 2 years later. After committing to Tennessee, he decides, okay, I'm actually just going to go to Florida now.
Man, recruiting, especially in the South, man, it's just, it's crazy. It's
especially in the state of crazy. Florida.
Like, right. Well, really, yeah, Florida especially, but even just the deep South, like Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, it's crazy, man. It's wild.
And this is going to get to the kind of recruiting conversation I wanted to have with you. So, we live in the city of Louisville. The Cardinals, they're just happy go fun time when it comes to basketball and football recruits right now. And I would say in football, they're doing much better than they were last year. They're doing solid.
They have a good class. But they're up. I mean, it's a solid class for them.
Yeah. And here's my question, Luckett. They're kind of taking the opposite strategy of Kentucky. They're loading up on commitments. They're up to 17 now. I think Kentucky is at 8. Maybe 9, and I feel like they're kind of dipping their toes in and waiting until they can start hosting visits.
Kentucky's at 11 commits right now.
They're up to 11? Oh, the punter.
Right. The punter and Joko Willis, Juco linebacker, unrated, and that's really what's bringing their ranking down.
Okay. Now, what – I guess not as much as my question, but I feel like – this is the Kentucky side of me, but I feel like Kentucky slow playing it under these odd circumstances is the smart move, especially if you're Louisville and you're Scott and you're Tots and you think that you're going to have another great season, you can win up to 9 games. Why would you take all of these kids right now when you could, in theory, get even better ones in October?
The same reason kind of Tennessee did it. You can always flip these kids and go get after, you know, bigger fish if you're in play for them. I think from Louisville's standpoint and what we've seen from Satterfield with early spring ball and then these hot starts in recruiting, he kind of likes to get it out of the way as soon as possible.
Huh, that's a good way to put it.
And like so just, he can focus on
get it whether, over with and get
whether it's the season or then, you know, the next recruiting class and just always trying to move fast and efficient, I would say. But when you look at Louisville, you know, they're doing a solid job. In the ACC, they're going to end up being like having the sixth or seventh best class. So they're right there with where they should be. They're above, you know, Boston College, Syracuse, Wake Forest, all them. Mm-hmm. But they're behind North Carolina and Clemson by a healthy amount. And then they're within punching distance of Miami and Florida State right now. And then Georgia Tech will probably end up above them. But that's good. That's good. That's where they should be. But
probably better than expected. I was going to say probably a little bit better than expected too.
Well, this class is going to end up between somewhere between 35 and 40, probably. And if you had told me you were going to get that from Scott Satterfield, you take it. You know, that's a win for you if you're Louisville. But it's a double-edged sword because he's not recruiting the state.
No, not at all. Whereas I think Kentucky, the reason why I kind of laid out, I think Kentucky's plan was, let's clean up the state and let's fill in a few holes. And they've done that with John Sumrall, recruiting some guys in the South, or recruiting some linebackers and some receivers, some where they need to just really load up in this upcoming class. And then they're going to save the last, I don't know, seven spots or so for big fish, for guys like Jagger Burton, guys like Rayshon Benny. Is it the Trigg kid? Is that his
Michael
name?
Michael Trigg, Tampa. Or what? Tampa.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like there's you've got your handful of big fish that you're willing to wait on, but you're plugging areas of need and you're cleaning up Kentucky to get things started.
I think what you're seeing with Kentucky is there's some, you know, top 300, top 200 prospects that they think they have really good shots at. I mean, you just named three off the top in Jagger Burton, Rayshon Benny, Michael Trigg, and there's a few others out there that I think they're kind of jockeying position for, and they're going to have to get those kids. Those announcements, it looks like those are going to go down to the wire. Like Rayshon right. Benny's probably going to go down to the last signing day. Jagger Burton delayed his decision. There's no telling when he's going to announce. I don't think Michael Trigg's in a big hurry. So those three guys, plus there's some unknowns out there that we haven't really discovered yet.
What's the kid, Doan, from Michigan?
Payne, is it Damon Payne?
Damon Payne, yeah. I was
like, that's a top 30 recruit they're in position for, probably going to be a five-star.
It's Michigan, Alabama, and Kentucky going after this guy.
Right, so and you never know.
So, yeah.
See how the season – that's going to be a thing. See how the season goes. Kentucky has a big year. They could really have a really legit shot to get him if they go and win 9-10 games, finish in the top 25.
In Jagger Burton's case, I know a lot of folks are probably, oh my gosh, he's moving the decision back. This is bad news.
He's dead set on making those visits, man.
Yeah, yeah. And I've always gotten this impression from Jagger, too, that – he's not looking for reasons to not go to UK, but he wants to go to all those places to confirm that he wants to stay at home and play for UK. Because he's grown up watching Oregon, and he's grown up seeing Ohio State, and they have a lot to offer in just the tradition of those programs in there. You know, they're playing on New Year's Day all the time. And I think he wants to help make Kentucky a part of that. And I believe that's where his heart's in it, but he has to go take these official visits. And because basically, I like the way he words it too. He's like, coaches, they'll lie to you. You know, it's their job to get you there. But players, they've got no reason to lie to you. So, you know, he's pretty close with Drake Jackson. And I can't name all the guys at other schools. But when he talks to those guys, most of the general consensus when he asks him, when did you know where you were going to go? It was when I took my official visit. So he's dead set on taking these officials. And I could see him deciding around Halloween, around November or something like that, once he gets a few under his belt and just being like, okay, I've seen enough. I've seen enough. I could see him using that Georgia weekend for a UK official visit or something like that. And then maybe, you know, Kentucky beats Georgia, and he's sold.
That's if we're having official visits. We still don't know.
No, you're exactly right. That hasn't – in the logistics behind that, like, of all of the tertiary things, even though it's incredibly important, when it comes down to actually having games, official visits, they're at the very back of the line and when it comes to priority.
One selling point I don't think people are touching on enough for Burton is the early playing time.
Yeah, that is because UK is the only place where
he can legitimately start at UK as a true freshman.
Yeah,
like that's not crazy.
And if you look at, I mean, the same thing happened with Landon Young. He was a five-star, top 100 guy, and Cole Mosier gets hurt. He starts the second game of his career.
Like, let's just fast forward to 2021. Kentucky's offensive line. Landon Young's gone. You probably sad Nasir Watkins in the left tackle spot.
Yeah.
Kenneth Horsey, who you think is going to start at left guard. He's holding down left guard. I would assume Quentin Wilson takes over at center.
Yeah, yeah.
Right guard, it's a total question mark.
Yeah, don't it's know. Anybody.
And right tackle is a total question mark. So
yeah,
I look at that right side and I think that those two spots are kind of waiting on John Young and Jagger Burton to take.
Yeah, and I would also say don't sleep on R.J. Adams.
R.J. Adams too, yeah.
He's a Kenneth Horsey. You better be on top of your stuff. Right. You know?
The only thing with R.J. Adams I want to see is just his weight. And is he going to be able to move around enough? Because he's got some weight that he probably needs to shape up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Nothing a few wind sprints and a max won't fix.
Yeah. Right. But I definitely think they see some bunchy Stallings probably in R.J. Adams.
And just to go back to Jagger Burton, though, that was – Kentucky's the only place where immediate playing time really is a thing. So you had that on top of all the other, selling points that Kentucky has. I think Kentucky's in a good spot with Jagger Burton. I also think they're in a good spot for a couple other kids. I threw their names out there on the site recently. One is Martez Thrower. And even despite his name, he's not a quarterback. He's a linebacker. From the state of Georgia. Yeah, yeah. A John Summerall recruit. They're both John Summerall recruits. And Luckett, I don't know how much you've looked at that kid's film, but very patient run stuffer. I like that he just sits whenever a bunch of stuff's moving. He just sits there and then hits the hole as soon as it opens up and the running back tries to run through it.
Yeah, it seems like they're making Georgia's a big kind of emphasis, especially South Georgia.
That's
where they've gotten Jamin Davis, Travis Tisdale, Katie McDaniel,
Magwood,
Chauncey Magwood. All those kids came from South Georgia.
Yes. And then over in Alabama, Summerall is recruiting a kid by the name of Christian Lewis, who just put up stupid numbers.
Another receiver.
Yeah. And,
yeah, he's a good-looking receiver prospect.
Yeah, yeah. He reminds me of Alan Daly in that he's like, oh, best receiver for state title team. And the only difference is that Daly won his and they lost theirs. It was a Tennessee Titans, St. Louis Rams Super Bowl kind of moment. But it was more like Friday Night Lights, where the dude gets the quarterback gets stopped in the like on the 1 yard line for the final play. Oh, it was absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal to watch that play unfold. But Lewis, he had almost 1,500 receiving yards, 20 touchdowns. those are crazy numbers. And he does it in a lot of different ways. That is, I put that tape up on KSR. Just folks, if you haven't watched it yet, there are some fun receiver highlights out there. He has like a little bit of everything. Whereas like some guys, like Armand Scott, he's screen pass and jump balls. This kid is... Isaiah Cummings, same way, just throwing it up and then like lowering his shoulder and blocking people. This kid has like catching passes in between like three defenders diving at him and then juking four times. Like just kind of like, how are they not tackling him? He's got fun tape.
As far as his recruitment, it looks like Notre Dame is kind of emerging as Kentucky's biggest competition there. He's got an announcement for September 28th. And then
it may be even sooner, Adam Luckett. You might just want to keep your ear low to the ground. Notre Dame, he's got offers from that kid has like 40 offers. And I know Tennessee's in the mix. Most SEC schools except for Auburn and Bama. Arkansas has really tried
to get I'm glad you brought them up. I was going to bring them up. Yeah. That's a school Kentucky's going up against on a lot of guys this class.
Derek LeBlanc's just like, oh, those one guys that we were going, it's almost like he kept the playbook.
Right.
Because and that's why that they're in with Rayshon Benny is because LeBlanc was recruiting him at UK and he goes to Arkansas and keeps that relationship going.
Yeah, Rayshon Benny ain't going to Arkansas.
Hey, you know what? As long as they get a hat on the table, they'll be happy. You got any more recruiting before we move on?
No. Mac Brown is this class he's putting together. I'll write about it probably next week in the recruiting roundup, but this is going to be it's got a chance to be a top five class. Like, it's going to be up there if he lands some of these guys thereafter, which is freaking incredible.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Now they're benefiting because the state of North Carolina's got 20 blue chip prospects this year. So, and they're landing a lot of those guys, but they've got I believe five top 100 recruits right now. And
that's crazy.
The number one corner, who's in Virginia, is a top 10 prospect. Tony Grimes, I believe his name. He's pretty much down to North Carolina and Georgia. He's going to go one of those places. And that's a recruit. That's one of the bigger recruitments to follow nationally. But the whole class is just incredible. Now, 14 of their 15 commits are from North Carolina. But if they go out of state and land a couple guys, you're looking at a class that's going to be, legit top 10, maybe even pushing top five.
I'm just trying to imagine a scenario where North Carolina is good at football.
I'm pulling it up right now. They have, looks like, 8 top 200 prospects already.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, which is 7. 7, I can't count. 7 top 200 prospects, but they're after a bunch more. Of their 16 commits, 11 are blue chips. So, he's kicking some major butt. On the recruiting track.
Of all of these ACC schools to try to contend with Clemson, it gives me so much joy that it's North Carolina, because nobody is less threatening than North Carolina. And even if Mac Brown does have a nice little run here, he ain't got a whole lot of fuel in the tank. I can't imagine him coaching more than 6-7 years there.
There's definitely some sleeping giant to North Carolina's football program, and I think we're going to hear that thrown out a lot just because of what Mac Brown's doing on the recruiting trail. And if you can recruit that in a bad division, because with Miami not having their act together, North Carolina is just lapping all these schools that they're in the same division with on the recruiting trail.
NC State, what have you been doing with Dave Doran this whole time?
That's the big one. And that's one for Louisville to always keep an eye on, because NC State's a program that could legit recruit at a top 15 to 20 level consistently. They have that, and because of local talent and because of they have a proven, name, they've always been able to recruit, Florida, Georgia, and then North Carolina and Charlotte area. When they have a lot of talent, they can go in and get some players. But for Louisville, a big thing for them is keeping North Carolina State down, because there's also some sleeper aspect to them where they really haven't reached their potential in a while.
Yeah, they've had the big quarterbacks that are in the NFL now, Russell Wilson, Phil Rivers. But they're getting older. And I think Satterfield at least has those North Carolina connections to try to recruit from there, and he's got Ledford on his staff. And so they're trying to pull from there, but right now it's their second fiddle to the in-state schools.
Right. Louisville, we're seeing some things with Satterfield. It's North Carolina, Georgia, and, they're trying to keep that South Florida pipeline pumping a little bit. But you're dealing with second and third tier prospects in those states most times than not. And then if you can't recruit your state, you can do that on a short-term basis in classes and survive without it, but eventually you're going to have to get players from home. And right now Kentucky's got the advantage there.
I would like to move to the state of Mississippi, Adam Luckett. We haven't talked about the Egg Bowl enough. It's been far too long, and it's in jeopardy of losing its best player this year. Colin Hill said, "Get your stuff together. Get that Confederate flag. Get that flag out of here. I'm not playing." Do you think that Hill is willing to back up that promise, that to sit on the sideline if the state of Mississippi doesn't change its flag and get rid of that Confederate logo in the top left corner of it?
I don't know. I would assume that it's probably going to take more than him speaking out to change that flag. I know a lot of people have spoken out about it. It's probably going to happen eventually. I don't know if it'll happen by football season. Colin Hill was a guy that he shocked everyone when he said he was coming back to school.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy most people thought would go probably third round or so, be like the top 100 pick. So right. Just coming back, especially with Mike Leach.
Yeah, especially with Leach.
Was a pretty big surprise. So we'll maybe see. He's I don't
like,
really know.
You know what? He's probably got in his mind like, I've done enough to get drafted. Hell, I can go supplemental.
That's what I was thinking. He could just go on the supplemental draft if he wanted to. But do you remember in the Music City Bowl, like, there was a big scuttlebutt whether he was even going to play.
Right.
He might just sit out for the draft. And then he ended up playing and then ended up coming back.
Yeah, it's real bizarre. So I hope just for – actually, I don't. I mean, playing Mississippi State without him would be much easier. He was the top rusher in the SEC, not named Lynn Bowden, last year. He's going to be preseason first-team all-conference. And if Mississippi State and Mike Leach don't have him, you want to talk about it could be a rocky first year in Starkville for Leach.
Yeah, but when they see him, it's going to be different than what they saw him last year, because it's going to be 12 carries and 9 receptions instead of 21 carries and 2 receptions.
I do appreciate, though, just that I think it was a day after Brandon Echols, who I mentioned earlier in this. Brandon Echols, not a big fan of the state of Mississippi. He tweeted out, I already had it in my mind I was going to leave that racist state. Mississippi don't deserve all the talent walking around there. Whole state ungrateful. Colleges in Mississippi don't even recruit in-state players like they're supposed to till it's too late or make us a last option. I don't regret being from Mississippi because it made me into what I am today. The only reason I claim it, so my young boy is trying to go to college and get out of there and go somewhere better. And the thing that I appreciated most about that tweet, Luckett, is he really doesn't claim that he's from there. If you go to his UK bio, when he got to UK, he said he's from Memphis.
Yeah.
Because he actually grew up across the river. You know, kind of like if you were in Jeffersonville saying you're from Louisville. He said he was from Memphis. That's how much he hates the state of Mississippi. And I absolutely love it. Just a big kind of F you to the state. And it's also a case of where it's like, hey, this dude is a crazy athlete. And I know he was a little undersized, but Jesus, did you see the videos of him dunking?
I did not, but that doesn't surprise me.
He's like 5'10 and doing windmills. Like,
he's a big time athlete, man.
Oh, man. Excited he decided to leave the state.
We would never see it, but I would love to see like an SEC half court, maybe 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 basketball tournament from just football players.
Ooh. Did you see Joe Burrow in the Papa Shot last year?
Mm-hmm.
He can get buckets. I mean, hell, a lot of these dudes are just great athletes that played both of those sports.
Right, you could, anyway. Yeah. Like, even Kentucky, I would like to see, like, what does the best five look like?
Ooh, let's try to put it together right now, off the top of our head. One of them in recent years, I mean, this I would have been really good at this game 3 years ago when I was closer to college, and I would see some of those guys on campus. The defensive linemen are the ones who surprise you the most. Like, Nick Haynes could windmill dunk and stuff, and he was, I mean, and that was before even he lost all his weight with diabetes.
He offensive lineman there, but yeah.
Right, yeah. But, like, though, some of the big guys, deceptively good. Ernest Sanders, I think we would have to put in there. We've seen that dude get up and cram.
Jordan Wright, I think.
Yes,
you could throw him out on a big basketball court and to be kind of a 6'5", 6'6", probably undersized four man just with a ton of athleticism that could rebound, guard, and, you know, block shots. I don't know if he can shoot or anything, but I think you could stick him on a basketball floor right now, and I think he would probably fit in.
He's a classic SEC West four-man.
Yeah.
Like Alabama or Mississippi State, you know?
Yeah.
Just like a big-ass physical dude.
You go to the SEC tournament, and you'll see 9 players like what Jordan Wright would be if he played college basketball.
And he got recruited to play college basketball. Mm-hmm. Hell, the only picture we had on the website of him for a long time was Stoops and Gran hanging out
at the basketball game.
In his basketball game. I'm trying to think if there's some any. That was a good one. If you all have any suggestions, please tweet them at us. Because I'm struggling to come up with some. off the top of my head right now. Well, I feel like AJ Rose was okay in basketball. There's some dudes we're obviously missing out there, but Jordan Wright, very good call. He probably is near the top. It's also a fun question to ask about like 4 weeks in spring practice or 2.5 weeks into camp when we run out of questions to ask and they start talking about basketball. Those are fun. I think Boogie's pretty good.
I can see that. From what
I understand. Yeah, I think Boogie's pretty good. So
he kind of fits in that same mold as Wright, where he
right.
He can go out there, rebound, block shots, guard people, and fit right in.
How on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are we that the Belk Bowl didn't change sponsors before this last appearance?
I love that name, man.
The Duke's Mayo Bowl. Oh my gosh,
beautiful.
And
I want to see the trophy. What that looks like?
It's just a giant jar of mayonnaise, just sitting in the hot sun. What do you get for bowl gifts? A package of egg salad sandwiches. Like, I mean, the last when Belk was the sponsor, they would just go on a Belk shopping spree, and like, did they get to go on a mayonnaise shopping spree? Get a bunch of different condiments. Oh, and what's going to be even more confusing is I'm pretty sure. So this applies to their preseason game too, and I'm pretty sure Duke's playing in that game.
Yeah, they have a kickoff game in Charlotte every year.
So Duke could win the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Duke's Mayo Kickoff Classic. Which I'm sure there could be all kinds of confusion.
I'm all for random crazy bowl names. Like, we need more of it if you ask me.
Big Bad Boy Mowers is
my They're favorite. No longer a thing. They gave up their sponsorship. They went to something else.
I enjoyed the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl, too.
Cherry Tart Bowl.
Yeah,
that was cool.
Who was it? Somebody over, I think it was our boy, it was either Jason Kirk or Alex Kirshner that went to the, it was like the warehouse industrial park in Michigan that was sponsoring the Bahamas Bowl this year.
It's a Chicago-like neighborhood.
It's basically like if Riverport in Louisville was trying to attract more businesses and was like, you know what, we can get a lot of bang for our buck if we sponsor the Texas Bowl. Let's
they sponsored that Chicago, whatever the heck it is, they sponsor the Bahamas Bowl.
At least Popeyes, you would think, like, well, maybe there's a Popeyes in the Bahamas. This is an industrial park in Chicago. Just, ridiculous.
Maybe we should absolutely get some ridiculous funds together and KSR can sponsor a bowl. Just 1 year.
Man, that would be fun. Like, that would be a lot of fun. Like, we get to hand out the trophy.
It could just be a Ryan Lemon statue. We call it the Lemon.
Oh, all right, look, let's wrap up with, we got to talk about our not so friendly friends from south of the border, the Tennessee Volunteers. There's two stories I want to bring up. One of them is a little bit more fun, and I'd like to save that for the end. I'd like you to start, Luckett, because the late Johnny Majors, before he passed away, RIP, Tennessee football, great, longtime head coach. Before he died, he spoke to a reporter from The Athletic, and basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but he kind of put up both of his middle fingers to Phil Fulmer?
Yes. Yes. And we can get into this relationship. So let's just give some background about Johnny Majors. He played at Tennessee, was an All-American in 1956. He was second to Paul Hornung in the Heisman Trophy in 1956. And Paul Hornung, of course, won it in Notre Dame was, what, like 2-9 or 2-8 that year?
Only like losing record.
Yeah, famously won it for only losing record. So that's still a thing Tennessee talks about to this day, that he didn't win it.
Ooh, that year. And Peyton Manning.
And that Peyton Manning didn't win it his senior year.
With Charles Woodson.
So those are two big things in Tennessee lore that they didn't win the Heisman. So he goes on, he plays in the CFL for a little bit, and then returns to Tennessee, assistant coach for a couple years, moves on, becomes a head coach at Iowa State and head coach at Pittsburgh and head coach at Tennessee. And he has an argument that he's maybe the second or third best coach at three different programs. when you look at Iowa State, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, the best coach maybe at Iowa State and Pittsburgh ever. Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. he wins the national championship. He's there for four seasons. After he wins the national championship, Tennessee comes calling. He kind of debates it, but he goes to Tennessee. So he gets to Tennessee in 1977 and is there for a while. Kind of a slow build, but they end up breaking through. He wins a couple SEC titles. They were not, you know, like a perennial championship contender, but they were a solid program, and they kind of got rolling there in the late 80s, finishing the top 10, 89-90, won nine games in 91. So he's entering his 16th season in 1992. And so entering that season, they had got a quarterback named Heath Shuler, who's one of the more famous Tennessee players, was a really good quarterback for them. And they enter the season ranked number 22 in the country. But mm-hmm. in that offseason, Majors, and during this, they were in like contract negotiations. Like Tennessee wanted to extend them. They were right. just trying to figure out how to do it exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, over the summer, it turns out he goes to the doctor and he needs quintuple bypass surgery, and it has to happen right away. It was an emergency. Like he had to go in August, right before the season started.
Oh, wow.
So Tennessee finds themselves in a bind, so they just make Phil Fulmer, who's their offensive coordinator at the time, and had been at Tennessee for a few years. And I believe Majors was the coach to hire him away from Vanderbilt, where Fulmer was an assistant for 1 year in 1979. So Fulmer's on his staff. He gets promoted to offensive coordinator in 1989. And so this is 1992. Fulmer mm-hmm. takes the reins, and they get off to a really hot start. Week two, they go to Georgia, win a crazy game. I believe it was like a crazy fourth quarter comeback, 34-31. The next week, they upset Florida at home. They go on 2 weeks later to win and shut out LSU in Death Valley. So they're 4-0. They're in the top five when Majors comes back. Majors goes on to lose his first three games back.
Oh.
Lose to Arkansas by 1 point at home when you're top five, an unranked Arkansas team. You host Alabama the next week, who's in the top five. You lose to them by a touchdown. Then you go to South Carolina the week after that, lose another one-point game. So he loses three games essentially by 9 points. After that, they rally the troops. They beat Memphis, beat Kentucky, beat Vanderbilt, and go to a bowl game. But while all this is happening, apparently Fulmer is, let's say, getting some people, important people in his camp. So behind the scenes, Fulmer is kind of...
Oh, Phil Fulmer's politics?
Kind of doing something that we've kind of insinuated that he does.
never would expect that from him.
He's trying to leverage himself into this coaching position. Because at this time, he's been an assistant for a while. He's ready to be a head coach. He gets a chance and they win. So he's like, hey, mm-hmm. I want to be the head coach. I want to be now or I'm leaving kind of thing. And so some important people end up going on to do that. And it turns out that all of a sudden, Johnny Majors' contract extension just kind of goes poof. It's not there anymore. They release a statement at the end of the season saying, Philip Fulmer will be our next head coach. Johnny Majors is leaving. Johnny Majors gives a statement pretty much saying, I had a great run in Tennessee. I appreciate all my coaches, ... the loyal ones. Now this was a release. Like, this article was in the AP. Like, you can Google Johnny Majors, Philip Fulmer, and you can pull up this article from 1992.
Wow.
And so from that point forward, Johnny Majors and Fulmer never talked to each other. Johnny Majors was not welcomed, like, was not invited back to the Tennessee football building until Lane Kiffin took over.
Wow.
And if you go back and look at what happened, Tennessee's offense, when they took over, kind of made a step forward, kind of modernized because they got more, the passing game became a little bit more exotic.
Right.
The reason it became that way is because when Fulmer was promoted, a guy by the name of David Cutcliffe started calling plays for Tennessee.
Ah, so maybe Fulmer taking credit for something he shouldn't have gotten credit for. Hmm, interesting.
So the whole thing with that was Fulmer is a back... He's a politician, man. So he's pulled some of this stuff before, and like we've seen with him as an AD, that you always have to keep in the back of your mind that he has done some backroom politicking. And he uprooted a guy that he worked for, essentially his boss. Kind of got his boss fired. And then Majors went to Pitt.
He pulled a Dwight Schrute, and I went to Jan and tried to get Michael Scott fired, and this time it actually worked. It actually worked. The other Tennessee story I want to bring up had a little bit more hijinks, and it was about that one time Kentucky stole Smokey, the mascot. And this was back in the
story.
Yeah, and my overall takeaway from the story is, good God, you could not get away with this today. Whereas, like, back then, just, you know, people weren't so damn sensitive to everything. There wasn't, like, internet for everybody to get outraged. News spread via the newspaper and television. And, you know, boys would be boys, that kind of thing. And essentially, a former Tennessee student goes to UK law. He still has press credentials, and he was in the pep club. So he knows how Tennessee uses Smokey. And this dog, this coonhound, it's only been there around for 2 years. And so UK students, they're like, oh, we got this new guy in a fraternity. They stole the beer barrel from us. Well, it's time for us to go steal their mascot. And after taking Smokey on a Saturday, the week before the UK game, it essentially sent off a week of just back and forth of people driving up and down I-75, just playing pranks on each other. There was Tennessee students that tried to paint an orange T at Memorial Coliseum and got arrested. And I love it that it just shows the 50s. The cops let them free once they agreed to.
There's no such thing as vandalism.
Yeah. And then there was another instance where they thought he was at the fraternity house. So a bunch of guys, they went to the frat house and they heard a bunch of barking. And when they opened the door, it was just a bunch of frat guys laughing because they
classic
were
frat humor.
Oh man, just classic frat humor. The dog was actually in Middlesbrough the whole time, and I like that. At one point, the vet called and said he's got a special diet, and if one thing happens to him, you'll fly me up, and I'll be there in a minute to make sure this dog's okay. And so they ended up like putting some reporters in the back of a car, blindfolding him, taking him to Smokey and saying, here, you can take a picture of Smokey, and putting him in a blue UK sweater. Mm-hmm. But there were, I mean, those were just a few of the pranks. The twists and turns that were really wild was like, yeah, they stole the UK mascot, Colonel, which was a wild cat.
I didn't know Kentucky had a live mascot until I read that.
They had one, but they realized, okay, these animals are not meant to be in, like, they live in solitude. They shouldn't be around 20,000 people. So they quit having that mascot after it died, and they had it stuffed by a taxidermist in like a science building. And the UT guys, they stole it back. They were like, give us our dog and you'll get your wildcat back. And they're like, dude, nobody cares. It's a dead cat. Like, come on. Just a lot of back and forth that ultimately ended with them exchanging the cat and the dog at the game. Kentucky won 23-0. They carried the beer barrel off the field, and all was well for a couple of years. And then this is where the twist even turned even more. Smokey, that same Smokey dog, Smokey 2, died 2 or 3 years later. It was on its leash, and it just ate an entire chocolate pie in Lexington, like at the UK game. How does a chocolate pie just get near a dog in the middle of a football game?
Maybe that's what the concession stand was selling before hot pretzels became popular.
Chocolate pies. Oh, God. And then what ended up
happening? The name of the guy who conspired it all.
Beauregard or something?
Beauchamp Brogan.
Yeah. I mean, just the frattiest frat guy in the history of frat. The biggest warrior ever. And then he ends up, after doing Tennessee wrong, he interviews to be in-house counsel at Tennessee. During his interview, he admits that he was the guy who conspired against the plan, and they were like, we want that guy defending our cases. And he served as in-house counsel for like 40 years.
No. He was UT grad, went to law school at UK.
Yes.
He was in the pep club or whatever, so he knew all of Smokey's what they did for him. And then who owned Smokey, apparently those people were pretty brash and just told everybody where they lived and whether they had this, you know, blue tick coonhound kind of lair for for all the future Smokies. And so they just went up there and the guy who owned them just gave it to him with no regard. He said, all right, we'll be back in a couple hours. And they weren't back in a couple hours. Smokey was up north kicking in Millsboro.
Yeah, wild time.
Bell County.
A better day for most. You know, just times were simpler in the 50s. Times were much, much simpler. But we all have a time limit. It's bath time for the baby dude. So I got to get out here. But it's been a pleasure talking football with you, as always.
Anytime, my man.
Anytime. Well, Luckett, we'll be talking to you soon. Hang on, folks. We'll be back with another episode of 11 Personnel before you know it. Until then, go Cats, go Kroger.